This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Aku tiada dokumen, itulah aku tolong bapakku dekat camp, angkat kayu dengan batu.
Pagi-pagi menyiram peria.
Pagi-pagi menyiram peria.
Tolong menolong amalan mulia.
Tolong menolong amalan mulia.
Bermain guli bersama rakan.
Bermain guli bersama rakan.
Bersatu hati membawa kebaikan.
Kalau aku ada dokumen, aku mau jadi cikgu. Cikgu boleh tolong budak-budak untuk menjadi pandai. Pasti sudah jadi pandai, aku gembiralah.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's Friday at 3 p.m, so we're once again revisiting a film from the Freedom Film Festival's vaults in our Stay Home and Watch weekly segment. So today we'll be dissecting the issues raised in the 2018 film Aku Mau Sekolah, translated to I Want to Go to School, which is a brief but very powerful look into the lives of stateless and marginalized children in Sabah who have no documents and therefore have no access to basic human rights such as healthcare and education. So I'm going to find out more about, you know, the sort of topics that the film covers from Sandakan native and filmmaker Putri Purnama Sugua. Welcome, Putri. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you, Juliet, for having me. Thank you, BFM, for having me here. It's really an honour.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. So this is not your first time on BFM, of course. You did come on the show back in 2018 to talk about the film, but we'd like to remind listeners, it's such an amazing film, a short one, but really so much packed into it and so powerful. Putri, I guess, you know, maybe we can start by talking about you. You hail from Sandakan, as I said, and you also grew up with many stateless children, am I correct? I know there's no official figure, but what are some of the estimates in terms of how many stateless folks there are living in Sabah?
I think it's within 800,000 to 1 million. I mean, this is just a rough estimation. Definitely can be more or less, but I think every year the amount is growing because a lot of newborn and all these kids contributing to that number.
Yeah. Okay. So it's either 800,000 to close to a million, right? And of course, there's no sort of official numbers, but you know, this has been the case for many, many years, pretty much your whole lifetime. Am I correct? And historically, I guess, you know, for people who don't understand the context, historically, why are there so many stateless people in Sabah? You know, where were they from prior to coming to Sabah? You know, why did, or initially, you know, when this sort of migration first started, what was it that caused them to leave their homes to come to Sabah in the first place?
I think a lot of it, because we have two descendants for these stateless people, and some of them coming from Indonesia and some of them coming from Philippines. Because in my case, I cover a lot of the Philippine descendants, community of Suluk, Bajau, and I think back in the 60s, there is a civil war happening in that border. So that's why some of them flew to Sabah to seek for a safety place. But also, I think because like back then there is no such thing as a border, because the place, I think Philippines, it's very close to the east coast of Sabah. So I think some of them is like have some family members in Sabahan and some in Philippines. So that's why they always visiting each other. But when Malaysia Sabah start joining Malaya, things start to go two different way, and then some stuck in Malaysia and some stuck in Philippines. I think that's also one of the reason. And of course, I think another reason because I think back in Philippines, there's not much thing they can do, I think, in terms of life improvement. So most of them smuggle into Sabah or Malaysia just to get a better life.
Okay.
And end up like years and years and years, a lot of more generation from these people getting to added more. And then that's how a lot of them doesn't have any documentation or proper documentation because they come in illegal, and then the generation continue not having any documentation.
That's right. And so initially, of course, the parents and the grandparents are the ones that came, but so many people who are now considered stateless in Sabah, I mean, were born and have stayed in Sabah pretty much their whole lives, but they have never ever and probably won't ever be recognized as citizens. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And the fact that they have no documents, right? That makes life very difficult, as we know. And I mean, that's something that you observed, you know, growing up as well. What are some of the lived realities of undocumented folks who are living in Sabah from your own observations?
I think there's a lot, you know. It's like being a stateless, it's like you are living in the limbo, like you are living in uncertainty. There's so many dangerous things around you, and you actually become a very fragile human being, because like you don't have any protections in terms of healthcare, security, banking systems, and like you always live in a chase, like you're feeling like anytime you can get captured and then sent back to Philippines. And some of them even doesn't have anyone back in Philippines. So I mean, I think my first experience, my first encounter is, of course, it covers on the education side, which is like growing up in that, what I call like a water village area. I saw so many of my friends that couldn't go to school. They cannot like going into the same journey as me. Mm-hmm. But back then, what I know is like they don't have IC. They don't have IC. But that time, I don't really know about this term of like stateless.
Yeah.
But what I know, like, I got a privilege to go to school, but some of my friends didn't. So it's a question as a child. And then as someone who like to wander around the village, so I saw so many of them are very struggling, especially if there is a raid. Mm-hmm. I saw people are running away from their house. So it's something that very weird for me. Like, why are you running away from your house and when it is your safest place, right?
Supposed to be, yeah.
Yeah. So all these, as a child, when I witness it, I have so many questions. And then when I become a filmmaker and I somehow ask myself, what is the story that you want to tell? And then it go back to that memory as a child. And then and that's just how the journey into making all these stateless film started. And then I think I always have this question, like, why nobody come and help? Help me and my family and people around me. And then and one day, without I knowing, I answer the question. Maybe if nobody's coming to help, then I think I should do my contribution because I'm a filmmaker, and then film is a very powerful tool, like, because it can go and travel to anybody in the world. So like seeing so many difficulties, especially like doesn't have access to healthcare, is something that very, 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 it's really a worst thing, because like I seeing some people who couldn't get treated because of who denied to get treated because of their
because they don't have a document, right? Yeah,
I see children who has a very, they are clever, they have so many potential growing, seeing, because they are very intuitism, and then they are very, they really want to get education, but sadly because of that documentation, they cannot further their future. The future is like they're stuck in the circle of what happened to their grandparents, in the circle of their father, and then they are continuing this circle. And then like there's no end of this kind of life, you know, as a children. And then we always have this concern. I mean, people around always have the concern, and always have the stigma and perception about like they are among the people that contribute to criminal and stuff like that. But again, like for me, I think we are the society that also contributing to it, because we didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, the past generation, the current generation doesn't want to take action. So we are also contributing to if anything happened around them, like, because we are there. we witness it, but we don't want to take any action.
Yeah, we're kind of complicit, isn't it? Because we know it's happening, but there's no sort of push to sort of solve this issue. It's a perennial issue. I've heard Sabahans call it, oh, this is a perennial issue. Yeah, but there's no actual action taking. And you know, when you were also growing up, and like you said, you know, these children were living, I mean, you know, some stateless folks were living around you. They were your neighbours, right? Did they have to face raids and things like that? Was that something that was just part of their lived reality as well?
Yes, it is. I mean, even until now, it's still happening because, you know, when authorities do raids, they're not going to mention anything. They're just going to go ambush anytime, like sometimes in the middle of the night. So people is always surprised and then people always like running around. I mean, most of my experience has always happened at night, even when I was a child. Mm. Like people start screaming and running around and like, for me, like, I'm just gonna wake up and then surprising, oh, okay, we know there is a rat. That's why people are running around. Okay. And then in the morning, we just, like, I will have a conversation with my friend and then, like, they talk about, oh, there is a authorities coming, so they have to go into hide. So seeing this, it's something really awful for people around me, I think, and also for these people too. Especially who has children with them, who has kids with them,
yeah.
They have to go through all this experience. Also, the children itself, and you know, because like child, yeah, very like even as an adult without documentation, you are so fragile. Imagine of a child, you know, like and growing up, have to start your life with that kind of experience. Definitely, there's so many things happening in their mind. Yeah. I'm sure, and then like for me. It's not fair because they do nothing wrong, but why they have to face this kind of circumstances and then why they have to have all this experience and why they can, like the childhood, it's taken away from them.
Yeah.
So all these things start to linger in my mind. It's really bothered me as a person. And then I think that's why I use my film as a medium to talk about it. And I hope people can know what's really happening and can come together and support whatever and do whatever we need to do to support them.
Okay, all right. We're just going to go for a quick break, Putri, but when we come back, we'll talk about the film itself and, you know, what it is that you tackle through it. I'm speaking today to Putri Purnamasugua. She's a filmmaker. Her film, Aku Mau Sekolah, tackles some very important issues happening over in Sabah, specifically statelessness and marginalized children in Sabah who have no documents and therefore no access to basic education. We'll find out more about the film after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Murid-muridku ini kebanyakannya lama sudah ini sekolah sama aku, berapa tahun sudah yang lain-lain itu. Dia orang juga, pandai juga dia orang ini yang pelajaran macam aku ajarlah sama dia orang. Pandai juga, ada juga yang pintar, ada juga yang bukan, macam biasa juga. Yang itu, yang budak-budakku besar ini kan, yang darjah dua ini, tidak baranti, mesti berapa tahun dia orang di sini sama aku. Dia orang harapkan kan yang dia orang boleh juga macam budak biasalah, macam pelajar biasalah yang di luar. Lama sudah yang dia orang lain-lain ini, di sini sudah mama dia orang lahir di sini. Aku pun di sini lahir, di Batu Tiga. Tapi, tiada dokumen kan.
Oke, okay, Hairi. Berdiri sini. Kasih aku bawa anak aku. Yalah, ada juga sini aku. Salah, bukan itu.
Dia orang mungkin kebanyakan di sini tidak mampu kan. Tidak mampu dia orang. Masa empat saja, kontrak saja. Itu yang mungkin dia orang tidak boleh keluarkan sekolah. Ya, tapi dia orang lahir sini semua. Ya, lahir sini semua dia orang itu. Si Anu itu, si Ariel itu, kasihan juga dia. Dia mau belajarkan, teruskan belajar. Tapi yang susah untuk anunya bayar yuran lah. Itu dia sendiri pergi sampah cari makan, ikut juga sama mamanya. Dia orang kan tiada sudah ada bapaknya. Itulah, tetapi dia mau betul-betul belajar.
Tapi yang lain-lain yang sudah pas your book, pas.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today is Putri Purnama Sugua. She's a Sabahan filmmaker. Her film Aku Mau Sekolah, which translates to I Want to Go to School, is basically about stateless children and marginalized children living in Sabah who have no documents and therefore no access to formal education here in Malaysia. And it's basically a cycle of poverty and a cycle of, you know, helplessness, really, because there's no sort of effort to solve the situation or to look into it. And let's talk about the film now, Putri. So as you mentioned before the break, you know, all these things were happening. You were growing up, you were witnessing it, you know, people stuck in this sort of cycle of poverty and there's no sort of way out, right? And you wanted to, you know, use this film to talk about it. So you focus mostly, or, well, I mean, you use education as the main sort of focus for this, right? For those who haven't seen, how would you describe what Aku Mau Sekolah is all about?
Aku Mau Sekolah is the urge of a children who wanted to have a future. It's the urge of a children who wanted to get the rights to be a children, you know. And I think it is their voice as a children. And I think everyone should watch it. And then, because somehow, when, like, for me as a filmmaker, when my first initial, when I make the film, when I see them, it bring back me, my journey as a children. And then it's reflect a lot, like, oh, this is how privileged I am as a person, as a Malaysian. But when I see them, like, imagine, like, I also growing up in that kind of area, and then I become who I am now.
Yeah.
But if you give that opportunity to that hundred of children, you know, maybe like around 50 to 80 at the time in the school, imagine if we give that opportunities to them. Some of them might contribute back to Malaysia. Some of them might be a doctor. Some of them might be a policeman. Some of them might be a filmmaker who, like, you know, because for me, every children have a right to education because they are the future of us. You know, like, if we didn't start now giving them education and then giving them the right, we should blame ourselves if anything happened in the future that come from them, you know, because we didn't do anything now.
Yeah.
So that is what, when I see, I mean, that's what is my film about. Like, I really want people to go into the world of these children and together, and come together and start raise their voice on behalf of these children.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that comes through definitely in the film. And, you know, when we start watching the film, we're introduced to this tiny little shack, but in it, it's crammed all these children, all trying to learn, trying to get the basic 3 M's, right? Membaca, menulis, dan mengira. Is that correct? The 3 M's?
Yes.
And of course, we meet the teacher, Puan Rujia Sami, isn't it? She's, I think she's also undocumented.
She's really an angel.
She is. She's a fantastic lady, you know, just trying her best to teach this whole bunch of kids, right? And just trying to get them the basics. She's yelling at them. Then, you know, it's really quite funny. It's quite sweet to see. But she really has her heart into it. How did you meet Puan Rujia? You know, tell us a little bit about her.
I think I know about her from NGOs, because NGO in Sandakan is very active going into the settler spaces, and some of them covering about this alternative school. Mm-hmm. So I know it from my friend, one of my NGO's friend, and then I went there and then I meet her personally, and then that's just how the relationship start. Because, like, before I make the, it's not like I go straight away to her and then make the documentary. We build up almost 1 year connection first, relationship first, and let her be comfortable around me, and then to understand more about, like, her struggle and also the student, and that somehow sort of inspired me to go into FFN and ask for the grant and then make the film.
And, you know, Puan Rujia, angel is the word, but she's also undocumented. Am I correct?
She is.
Yeah, but she, you know, as she says in the film, there's a point where she says, you know, I'm also struggling, but, you know, I want to give these children education. And she's been doing it for a long time, isn't it? Quite a few years she was trying to have this unofficial school for the little kids.
Yes. yeah, I think she's the biggest contribution in that kampung. That make because most all of the children in there already know how to read, and then I mean, definitely if they go out to that outside world, they can survive because they have all that basic of education, which is that is the responsible of Cikgu Rujia. She's contributing a lot for her society. So, I mean, it's my film is not only about telling like the luck of the children, like how unlucky they are, but also try to inspire people like to be like Cikgu Rujia, you know. Someone, you don't have to do bigger contribution to your people. Just a smallest one, but you know that it can make a very big impact. So she's really, really inspired me. Even until now, I visited her last November. Mm-hmm. She's still the same teachers. It's not teaching. She's still like struggling. Even the children now, it's added up to like almost 80s to 90s. Wow. But she's still like, even teach two sessions like in the morning and also in the afternoon. So imagine you have to face that so many children like all day and by yourself, and you also need to do the administrative on your own. So it's really, really powerful and amazing character for me.
Yeah, and again, you know, this is not a formal school in any way. It's just this rundown shack where she's got a whiteboard and she's trying her best, and the kids have books and, you know, they're trying their best to learn. And I think even she says, you know, some are very bright, some not so, but, you know, she tries her best to help everybody just to get that basics, isn't it? We meet some kids in the film, of course, and one of them is somebody called Ariel, who unfortunately I found out has actually passed away since the film was made. I'm really sorry to hear that, and I'm sorry to ask you as well, but could you tell us about Ariel, his story, and what it is actually that happened?
Ariel is a very, very bright kid, just like the normal kids. He is very, very atheistic, and then really wanted to get the education to change the family situation. So like he mentioned in the school, he wanted to be success so he can give a better life for the parents, which is something really amazing for me. It's really a surprise to find out that he passed away. But because before the incident, like the brother had been contacting me and saying that Ariel like has a fever and something like that. At first I thought it's not serious, and then suddenly one day I got, because I was in the middle of the production, it's happening in August 2020.
Okay.
I was middle of shooting when in early morning when I get up to get prepared for my shoot, and then I got a call from the brother saying that Ariel passed away, and then I really cannot brand when I get the news. It's just something that, is it really happened? Because I feel like it's just yesterday I meet Ariel. Yeah. And then I contacted the mother, and then the mother was also at a confused state. And he mentioned because of it is tuberculosis and things, the lungs getting worse. And then it cannot, because they sent it very late to the hospital because of they scared about the documentation and stuff like that. And yeah. Once it's in hospital, you cannot do anything anymore because it's already become worse. And yeah, when I found out about that, of course I have a really, really big emotional breakdown at that time in the middle of production, and I really cannot think straight. But at that time, what I'm thinking is only just to help as much as I can for the mother to manage Ariel for the last time. And then, that's how things started. And I call a bunch of my friends in Sandakan to help the burial ceremony, and then send some helps to the family. So things goes very smooth. Yeah. Not for the mother to say goodbye to their son for the last time. So even until now, if I talk to the mother, it's really something that very hard for me to talk about Ariel. Mm. To be honest with you, since the Ariel passed away, it's hard for me to watch Aku Mau Sekolah again, because like seeing Ariel, I was the person behind the camera, and then yeah. it's hard for me to talk about Ariel and because things become so fresh when you see the film. Like for me as a filmmaker, because I was there, I spent a lot of time with them. So when I watch the film, it's still fresh for me. For me, what I'm really glad as a person is I managed to capture him. Mm-hmm. I managed to put his story and to make him live 4,000 years in my film. So people keep, because he will keep alive and inspire people with his story. His determination to work, get money just to get the education so he can, like hoping can change the family life, even though he know that he can only continue at one point. So it's something that that I, as a filmmaker, I'm glad, and it's the biggest motivation for me to keep on continuing making this kind of story and sharing this kind of sharing the stateless community life and to the mainstream, to the film.
Yeah, and I mean, it's horrible. I watched the film after knowing that Ariel had passed away, so it was even more painful to watch it, because you know there are scenes in the film where you show how he's, you know, trying. He works late nights at the dumpsters, isn't it? Trying to source for rubbish so that he can sell it, and you know him and so many other young children. This is what they have to do to earn just a few 50 cents, 5 ringgit, just so that they can go to school, just so that they can, you know, have some basics, basically, right? And it's really, really heart wrenching to know that he passed away from TB. Again, something that, you know, you and I as Malaysians, we would have been inoculated at birth against, you know, and then at six, we would have gotten that vaccination, you know, because we have access, because we have ICs and we have access to healthcare. So, you know, these are all the discrimination
it's
that...
Very fast. It's everything's happened just only after 2 years we filming, and then all the sickness is also because of his working in that environment, you know, that dumpster it's really, really awful to be there. You really cannot breathe. You cannot go around. It's so dirty because it's years and years of rubbish are there. So
yeah.
Ariel is, to be honest, just one of the children that have to face that because of it. But there is more. And it's happening every year in that area because children, I mean, that's the only way for them to, you know, continue with their life, getting some money and then helping family. So, and also can get what they want when they work. So imagine more children have to face this kind of things. So it's such an awful experience and awful thing for children. So
for anyone, really. I mean, worse still, children. Nobody should have to live like that. So, I mean, these are the topics, and you know, yeah, it's really heartbreaking. But of course, the film has shone a light on what's happening. And I know that when the film came out, you know, there was some response from the then government, right? There was that no reject policy, and you know, those sorts of things came out from the film. What are some of the other reception to the film that you thought was positive? You know, after it came out.
I think one of the thing is like more people started to focus on the stateless issue because it's somehow become a sensational issue. People wanted to know about what's going around in Sabah, what is this stateless thing in issue in Sabah, and then more NGOs come and help the alternative school in Sabah. So that is something that it's what I want. People come together and start talking about the film, start talking about what's really happening. Like for me, it's just a medium for me to bring out the issue. And then at the end of the day, I want the people, the society, the audience who watch it, start to do something out of it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm very glad because the film is now, even until now, it's still screened in the school, it's still screened in NGOs meeting, and when people wanted to talk about stateless, like for me as a filmmaker, I give you authorities to just show the film. So because the more people watch it, the, the better it is, because more people know about this and they can come together and help the children.
Yeah. I mean, we are so privileged, right? How can we... We shouldn't watch the film and say, oh, I'm so lucky, but how do you use that luck for the benefit of others, right?
Like even a small of posting on your Facebook, on your social media, that is a contribution.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. Like, you, one person, you post on your Facebook and then another two or three person read it and then they wanted to know about this talent. So it's just like you are a person who contributing to more, like, more people knowing about it and then talk about it to their friend, and then maybe some of their friend are interested to know more and then wanted to help. So I mean, this is kind of impact that I think, like, how powerful media is, like,
yeah.
You know, they can influence people and bring people in.
Is there any way, if anyone's listening and they're keen to get in touch, you know, you mentioned some of the NGOs are working directly with the folks that you featured in the film, like Cikgu Rujia and all of that. Is there any way that we can get in touch with them if we'd like to offer assistance?
Yeah, because for now I couldn't really share the contact, but I can share some of the NGOs in Sabah or Sandakan and in KK or in Semporna who you guys can work with. And then if you guys want to volunteer, these NGOs, like always need help, volunteers. So definitely you can contact. You can even get them through Facebook, and then, like, one of it, if focus on the education, I can suggest, like, Bonyo Comrade and Chaya Society. They are the two alternative schools that already work close with it, and then they are very touristic and very helpful in giving education to this stateless community. So, I mean, you can find out more about them on social media, like Facebook and Instagram.
Okay. All right. So Bonyo Comrade, yes, we've heard a lot about them. They're very, very active. So there are many.
By Mukmin and Shakila and Chaya Society by VN. All these young, like, I'm so glad to have them in Sabah, because they do a lot of contribution to the society. They are one of the heroes that, you know, that really care about the, and they are very young, and at that age they already start thinking about their society and the future of these children. So it's something that very noble.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Putri. I guess, you know, just one last message from you. What do you hope new viewers, you know, who come to watch the film in today's context will take away from it? Any last message that you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I hope you guys can watch the film, and then definitely my wish is that you can get something out of it, you know, and then a small action as, like, just posting on your social media and talk about the stateless issue. It's something that bring definitely bigger contribution to the issues. I mean, the film is for everyone, and definitely we hope that everyone can come together to help and support these children, because they are the future of us. You know, they will always be there, and then they cannot go back to, because they don't have any places they belong to.
Yeah, born here.
Yeah, they're always going to be there. They don't have anywhere to go. Even the place they are staying now, they are illegal. And then the authorities try to chase them out. But to where? That is always the biggest question for them. So I just hope when people watch the film, like, we can come together. I mean, you can always do your part. I think that this is always the quotes that I always say, that education is for everyone. And these children definitely have the rights to get it.
Yeah, I mean, stateless kids, you know, no fault of their own. They got just born into this world with... And face a lifetime of rejection, of fear, disappointment, discrimination. I mean, I can't imagine that sort of stress of just constantly being on your guard and just constantly feeling like an outsider wherever you go. I mean, who can live with that kind of stress, right? So
living in scared, you know, you always have to running away because you say, the authorities will come and capture me. You're always running away, and some of them even have to be separated with the family. So who want to live like that? Like, nobody want to live like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I guess, you know, for me watching the film and having two young children of my own, just, you know, how privileged we are. But aside from that, what can I do with my privilege to help? So yes, like you said, share, donate, volunteer, whatever. There is something that everybody can do to sort of address this situation and to help in this situation. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Putri Purnama Sugua. She's the filmmaker behind the film, the award-winning film, Aku Mau Sekolah. If you'd like to watch that film, and I highly recommend that you do, it's only about 20 minutes or so, just head to the Freedom Film Fest's YouTube channel, or you can just head to freedomfilm.my to find out more. And again, as Putri mentioned, you know, there's lots of NGOs, just do a quick search and you will find the different NGOs who are working out to help them. You can make a contribution in some way. Everybody can do something. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can always download the podcasts at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Pendidikan ni memang kita kena mulakan dari awal, dari sejak anak-anak lagi kepada mereka nih. Dan bila kita lihatlah anak-anak yang tanpa pendidikan nih, salah satu dia akan tidak perkara yang sosial lah, senang kata, dengan gejala penagihan, pencurian dan macam-macam lagi lah. Salah satu permasalahan yang serius yang kita hadapi adalah untuk membangunkan sekolah nih, dan kita akan cuba minta dapatkan dana. Dan itulah yang salah satu dia yang serius adalah bila datang pihak-pihak berkuasa dan robohkan sekolah-sekolah ni. Macam sebelum ni, di kawasan penempatannya ada 3 buah sekolah yang dirobohkan serta merta. Yang saya cakap itulah yang sekolah triple A dekat madrasah belakang dan di sebelah sini adalah sekiranya ada serbuan ataupun perobohan di kawasan ni, satu saya minta tolong jangan libatkan sekolah anak-anak tanpa negara ni, kerana dia pendidikan ni adalah penting untuk anak-anak, tidak kiralah dia warga ke ataupun tidak.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.